This is episode 66 of the Fifth Estate Podcast, Robert George and the Limits of Free Speech. It is time for another episode of the Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso. I'm your co-host, along with my co-host, Mr. Neil Dewing. How are you, sir?
I'm alive, Jay.
That's it? You're just alive? That's the best you can do?
That's about it. That's all I've got for you.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, even you're alive, and you know, this is the point of the show normally when we sit there and we ask our lovely listeners to go out and do the whole iTunes thing, but we have something a little different this time.
That's right, we do. To all our loyal listeners out there, and to even our fair weather friends, we're going to ask you something. We've been asked by the Ricochet Network to get our listeners to participate in a short anonymous survey. And this will help them better understand who's listening, who's out there, who is enjoying this show, if anyone is. And I assume you are. And you can take that survey, and we'll put it in the link to the show at podcastlistener.com/estate. So that's podcastlistener.com/estate. Jay and I would be eternally grateful to you,
yes,
if you would please share your thoughts at that link.
And just so you know, none of the information that you provide is going to be shared with any of the advertisers that you hear show up on this show, so you don't have to worry about anything like that. It's basically just them gathering some information. A lot of times it's helpful, because what it does is it allows them, you know, when they're doing their research over what, you know, people like, what they want to listen to, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So once again, it's podcastlistener.com/estate. Okay. So Neil, a lot of different things going on, stuff going on that goes back to, in my view, and we'll explain this to everybody, you know, going back to the whole Charlottesville mess and what happened there, and, you know, the response and what went on and everything that's it all kind of goes together with what's been happening, probably going back to the election, in terms of, you know, free speech and what people are, you know, what people are doing, what they're in terms of expressing themselves. And some of it is,
yes,
normal. Some of it has been very ugly.
That's right, Jay. And, you know, I've been trying to desperately to avoid this latest flare up in the ongoing free speech debate, just because I think it's entirely absurd. But it is, I think you're right, it is of a piece with the longstanding questions about free speech. And thankfully, this latest episode is not nearly so troubling as neo-Nazis marching through Charlottesville. We wanted to bring in a guest today who would be able to give us a little bit more on the subject, especially since, as I said, I've been studiously avoiding it. And so we've brought Robert George of the New York Daily News editorial board in to speak with us. Mr. George, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen. It's an honor to be here on the, what is it, the fifth estate, the fifth column, or something like that, whatever the president might want to think of us at this point.
we'll wait and see about all the bad stuff we say about him later on before we decide on that. But thank you very much. No, we really appreciate you being with us tonight.
Good to be here.
So, as I said, I've been avoiding this latest issue because it's about tweets that the president made about the NFL and the protest by some players on the sidelines of taking a knee during the national anthem. And I guess my initial question on this would be, why is Trump bringing this up, this issue? I mean, it was dying down last year. Colin Kaepernick, got a lot of, bad press, and everybody was very upset, and it was pretty much done. Right. It's pretty much done. And so now suddenly it's back, and we've been talking about it for the last, 2-3 days now.
Well, yeah. Just to clarify, and this is a kind of important clarification. This is one of these little Trump kerfuffles that did not actually start in a tweet. It started out as part of his campaign rally in his endorsement of Luther Strange, the senator in Alabama, who's being challenged in the primary by Judge Roy Moore. And it's important, actually, I think, in this discussion of free speech and what the president's doing and so forth, that it happened in that context because there was a certain amount of performance art. Donald Trump, to give the devil his due, is, and this is something I don't think that many people in the press, left or obviously many on the left or mainstream, are not necessarily want to credit him this, but even some of his critics on the right, of which I nominally consider myself one, Donald Trump is a very good performance artist. If you take a look at some video from his Friday speech down in Alabama, and how he's talking to the audience, and when he's delivering his punchline, and this NFL thing that started down there was this punchline of where he says, wouldn't you like to see an NFL owner? One of these sons of bitches who's taking a knee, just coming up to him and says, "You're out of here. You're fired. You're fired." And this is the thing. I mean, the crowd, as the saying goes, the crowd goes wild, and the president sort of moves away from the mic, turns his back to the audience. Looks at this, this huge, huge American flag that's in the background, and gives two thumbs up, and then kind of turns around and basks in the thrill of the audience again. I mean, it's if anybody ever saw, and this is, I know I'm gonna, I'll tick off a lot of people when I make this kind of comparison. If anybody ever saw clips of James Brown in his heyday, when he is given this great show, and he basically pretends to collapse on stage and just wanders away, and one of his men on the outside come in and puts the cloak around him and covers him up, and then he comes back out and takes the mic again and starts dancing. And I mean, it has that kind of showmanship, and it's what the president revels in. All of that said, you can't divorce the fact that the president, who has sort of traded in, if it's not quite racism, certain racial imagery and racial language, and in a number of occasions, is in front of a largely, almost exclusively white audience, and he doesn't say these jerks or these entitled clowns or whatever. You've got the president of the United States who actually says these sons of bitches, and he's talking about predominantly black players who have been taking a knee to try and raise awareness on issues of police brutality and things like that. Now, we can debate as to whether that's the most effective way to raise these issues. I'm of two minds of it myself. But it is what it is. But here he is, using this kind of language, and it's hard. I know I've got conservative friends who are not friends, are not fans of Trump, but who think he's right on this. He thinks that
they think that the NFL players are, you know, overpaid and privileged and so forth, and they should be saluting the flag, and they say it has nothing to do with race. I personally think it's difficult to completely remove the racial dynamic from it.
I agree with you, and I just want to say that I absolutely love that James Brown comparison. That's the most original comparison I think I've heard Trump compared to. I've heard him compared to a lot of things, but James Brown is not. Is that's the first time? But I think
you know, a lot of my brothers and sisters are going to be very upset. About that one.
I think it absolutely fits. He is, if he's nothing else, he's a showman. So.
And so, but then he doubled. He then, of course, the tweeting part, of course, came in when he got there was the fierce backlash from not just NFL players, but, you know, LeBron James started tweeting back. And not surprisingly, the at that point, it was on. Donald Trump was in his element. And so you had all kinds of tweets coming out Saturday morning, Sunday morning. And he was just kind of ginning up. And this is, you know, this is a way of him to, whether it was on stage on Friday night or in Twitter on Saturday and Sunday, what's the phrase it was the Wall Street Journal, that's right, the cultural catnip. This was the catnip for his base, and it continues to bond those in many cases sort of aggrieved white working class types that have bonded with him, and because it, in a sense, it sets him up as, you know, the critic of these privileged wealthy black athletes, whether in the NFL or whether in the NBA.
Yeah, and so and you kind of touched on that, Robert, but let's kind of step back for a second where, you know, and the Wall Street Journal, and it was funny because I read that, I said cultural catnip is like perfect for him, but Trump is also, and not just in addition to a showman, he's also, you know, forget about his whole businessman deal making kind of thing, but marketing, he knows how to sell the Trump brand.
That's exactly right.
And so one of the things that he does, though, of course, he knows that his base, part of his base, is made up of the alt-right, people like that. And, of course, by extending his criticism only to, you know, obviously in this case, Steph Curry and people like that, you know, and Colin Kaepernick and players who are kneeling in the NFL, you know, it's black sports, you know, black athletes. And so there is that element of him once again playing footsie kind of with that part of his base to kind of give them something to feel good about as well. Is that right? Do you agree with that or no?
I think that's a fair point. And as some black folks have pointed out, he's got it really in for the light skinned brothers, because both Kaepernick and Stephen Curry are of the light skinned type, but that is quite right, and pardon the expression, it's quite alt right. What I think is rather intriguing that. The president who, starting on Friday and going into the weekend and actually was continuing, you know, continuing to Monday as well and the rest of the week, this president who is saying, you know, you must stand for the flag, you must stand for the country, this is the same president who a few weeks ago was standing by very fine people, his words, very fine people who were marching with the Confederate flag and with swastika flags. So it's fascinating that Donald Trump seems to
want to adopt both the flags of the Union and the Confederacy. And it's a really troubling image, to say the least, that there are these little signals and these little winks to the alt-right, and you know, it's where we are.
Yeah, well, you know, how do we reconcile this sons of bitches remark with the very fine people remark? I mean, I know we're saying that we see these elements, these little undertones of the racialism playing to the base, but I mean, that's a contradiction, right? I mean, in itself, how can these neo-Nazis in Charlottesville be very fine people? And then these NFL players who are, I would say, rather respectfully protesting to raise awareness. How are they sons of bitches? I mean, it's.
Well, I will say, I'll say this, to try and separate this away from the president. In my day job, when I'm on the editorial board of the Daily News, we share responsibilities of going through the letters to the editor, and today I was putting together our letters page for tomorrow's edition, and this thing this weekend sparked a chord. I mean, we were inundated with letters on this, and I would say that more than half to two-thirds of them were supportive of Trump's position. Even those people who would open their lips, say, I'm not a Trump fan, but there is a segment of the populace that is beyond the Trump, I think beyond the Trump base, that sees. Standing for the national anthem as just something that you do as a good American, as a good person, and there are other ways in their view. There are other if you've got to protest racism or police brutality, things like that. There are other ways to do it. And the other a line that came through in a number of these letters is. I don't get to protest on my job. So how is it they get away with protesting on theirs? So that's why the SOB remark for some Joe Public folks out there was not off-putting. Even though some of them said, well, you know. He may have gone a little bit too far in his particular type of language, but his basic point was correct. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, I am kind of stunned at the idea that the president, you know, wants to call, you know, falling on a knee during the national anthem. You know, people who do that are SOBs, and these other ones are very fine people, but. To your earlier point, in the context of not wanting to offend the alt-right or once wanting to reassure the alt-right, it makes perfect sense. You send one message. It's the same type of message. It's basically that President Donald Trump. For many of those folks, and this is also, I think, also resonates with parts of the conservative base that do not think of themselves as alt-right. They appreciate Trump as being the slayer of political correctness, and so it is if it's PC to be skeptical of the flag, Donald Trump is the opposite of that. If it's PC to be standing by certain if it's PC to be standing by monuments, whether they're Confederate or otherwise, Donald Trump is there, and so that's how certain people managed to overcome that contradiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, in crass political terms, I mean, what does he get out of this? Does he get stop the hemorrhaging of his approval ratings? Does he distract from more important issues? I mean, North Korea is still a thing. The hurricane relief is still a thing. What else we got going? Oh, the failure to repeal Obamacare is still a thing. So is that what he's getting out of this? Just a convenient little shiny object?
I would say, in a manner of speaking, yes. Well, look at this. I mean, this weekend we weren't really talking about the latest collapse of Obamacare repeal. We were barely talking. I mean, when was his UN speech? That was Wednesday, was it?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it was 2 years ago. You know, all presidents have the ability to change the narrative, to change the topic, because of what the White House is. Most cases, you usually have a communications team that says, okay, this week we're going to be talking about this, so we can pivot away from that thing over there. Donald Trump, and you mentioned this before, Donald Trump is his own best marketer, and so here he decides that he's going to, he's going to have an hour and 20 minute speech that is nominally supposed to be about endorsing Luther Strange. Oh, by the way, Luther Strange is going to lose tomorrow in the primary to judge Moore. And it's interesting, in that same speech, Trump endorses Strange, but he says to himself, "Well, I may have made a mistake here, because he can read the polls as anybody else, and he knows he's in a sense backing the losing horse, but he has to sort of do it because Strange is the incumbent and so forth. But he, that's what he does. He whatever anybody else was talking about beforehand, it just was blown out of the water for the last four or five days, and it doesn't help the Republicans at all in terms of getting anything through Congress. They've still got the daunting task of tax reform and so forth in front of them. But it enhances the Trump brand. I don't know whether it really helps him in terms of pure approval rating or things like that. I would tend to doubt it, but it certainly cements his connection with his base.
Okay, so let's kind of segue away from that into part of the discussion that's a little bit more geared toward talking about speech. We mentioned Charlottesville a little bit, and we talk about these expressions that people have, and obviously you had. Yeah, there were two kind of marches in Charlottesville. There was one at night that was really
the Friday night one, right?
Yeah, the neo-Nazis marching with their torches and shouting Nazi slogans and anti-Semitic things. And then the next day there was another one that was really more about the statues. But that's where we come to, and it's a question of how much speech should people have. And you have absolutists who would say, look, man, these guys are saying whatever they want to say, but that they have a right to do that. And then there are people who might say, well, if they're going to be saying stuff like Jews will not, own us or, that kind of thing.
Jews will not replace us.
Jews will not replace us. Exactly. Sorry about that. If they're going to be saying stuff like that, then maybe they don't deserve the same kind of free speech protections as somebody else, because what they're doing is at that point is not necessarily it's speech, but it could be in something that could be, somebody might say, they're stoking violence, they're stoking they're inciting violence or something like that, even if they're not using the word, say, go beat somebody up or beat a Jewish person. But there is that fear. I mean, where do you kind of stand on that? Like, how do we reconcile that?
I tend to lean more on the absolutist side of the free speech or the free speech debate, and I think some people will say that one of the explanations behind Trump's rise is a backlash against what they feel is an increasing stifling of speech that's coming from the left. The whole idea of safe spaces and triggering and all of this kind of stuff, which has spilled over into this question of you know, is it okay to punch a Nazi? I think one of the frustrating things of the moment that we're in right now is that the same side that says, you know, that it's okay to punch a self-identified Nazi, the reason why they're saying that it's okay to say that is because they then argue that defining yourself as a Nazi is, or some other villainous type of individual is violence in and of itself. That the statement, if you identify as a Nazi, or if you self-identify as a racist, or make statements that trigger feelings of oppression among certain individuals, that is violence in and of itself. So it justifies the actions of the Antifa. And it justifies, you know, somebody coming out and, you know, slugging Richard Spencer, the alt-right leader, and so forth. And I am no fan of the alt-right or neo-Nazis, which is the better phrase for them. That said, I'm no fan of theirs, but I can't go along with others that say that speech itself is actually violent, and that justifies actual violence. Not going there.
I have to agree. You know, I think that the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law abridging, you know, freedom of speech, to paraphrase. But you know what that means is Congress shall make no law. So you have a right to say these things. You have a right to march down the street in Charlottesville and shout Nazi slogans if that's what you want to do. But just because you have a right doesn't mean that it's the right thing to do. And I think what we come up against here, and what I think makes the left go bonkers, is that there are limits on free speech, but those limits are self-imposed. Those limits, I think, arise out of personal and civic virtues that are increasingly rare in our citizenry.
And falling apart on a daily basis.
Absolutely. I mean, being pecked apart, you know. I mean, you've got the president on the one hand setting a very poor example indeed. But, you know, it falls to, I think, each individual person to be civil and courteous and to exercise their right to free speech in a responsible way that is also respectful of the right of other people to hear. And I think that's what frustrates the left, because they can't make people behave. So they default to thinking, well, it's impossible to just trust people to be good, and so we must make a law abridging their freedom of speech. We must deny them the freedom to speak, which is not the proper solution, unfortunately. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? You think that's kind of the real problem there? That's where I end up.
I Repeat that question. I was going one way and I just lost it.
Not a problem. No, I was just saying that. I mean, do you think it's really, is it a matter of the civic virtues? Is it a matter of, personal virtues? I mean, and thus, and what I'm really getting at is, is it thus an impossible situation that will never be resolved and we are resigned to endless conflict and doom?
Well, you know, it's funny that you put it in that context because getting back to a point I was making before, just reading letters from real people on this, a number of them, particularly since not surprising, they read newspapers, so their average age is well above 40, to put it mildly, they would say things like. I can remember going to the ballpark and my mother or my father taking off my cap or taking off my hat and putting it over my heart and we say the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, this is just what we do. That is a tip of the hat to the idea of civic virtues of having an automatic respect for the flag, and when the national anthem starts, you stand up and you either put your hand over your heart, or if you're in the service, you stand at attention. Those are kind of the civic virtues that a certain part of America, that sees Trump as their unusual champion, that they think in his own weird gruff way that he's standing up for certain kinds of civic virtues of an America that is fading away. Another letter writer put it. Put it to us this way: Donald Trump is standing up for the morality of the 1950s. I would not characterize it that way. Others do. But you're correct that because we are having this fraying, this accelerated fraying. I mean, the fraying is the collapse of our institutions. Whether at the government or private sector or independent sector or whatever, the collapse and distrust of our institutions has been a rolling disaster for at least four or five decades, and it's to where we are right now. It's where we're getting to this idea of. I guess 60 Minutes had it on this weekend, where we're starting to see ourselves and as two completely different countries that are creating two different rules, two different languages, and we're increasingly speaking past one another.
And I think that's a valid point. And what I think the anthem becomes in that circumstance is an uncomfortable reminder that we're not two countries. We are, in fact, for the moment, stuck with one another, and we need to try to work it out.
That is true. But to go back a little bit of history. Let's put the anthem aside for a moment. The flag has always been how to factor in the flag in one's life has not always been an easy automatic thing for African Americans.
Very true.
And you can go back and for the folks listening at home, I don't know if I sound African American, but I guess I am. But You can go back to Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass's major speeches. You can go to the speeches and statements by Jackie Robinson. And while it is true that we are obviously not living in the era of Frederick Douglass, the athletes today are not Jackie Robinson. The fact is there are a number of issues in connection with the African American community and the rest of the country. There are major economic inequities, social inequities, obviously problematic relationships with law enforcement, and so it is part of a lineage. Douglas, Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali. It's a line that still continues to this day, and there can be a lot of debate. Myself from the conservative side, can talk about some of certain things that have gone wrong, and that where the left doesn't have an answer for, and so forth. But I think whether left or right, fair-minded people will say, okay, well, there are certain issues here involving the African American community and the rest of the country. How would we try to address that? There is of course kind of another movement. Maybe it's partly connected to the alt-right, maybe not. Who are more their kind of view is to kind of throw up their hands and said, look, we've been doing this for like 50 or 60 years. Going back to the civil rights movement and the Great Society, we spent billions, and we've elected a black president. And they're still complaining. Why do we have to deal with this anymore? I don't want to listen. That reaction is also growing, and so that's a different side of the two sides of America and how they view the flag. And oh, by the way, there are also hundreds, if not thousands, of African American veterans out there who have put their lives on the line for that flag, and they're part of this discussion as well.
All right, well, we appreciate Robert. Thanks so much for joining us. We're speaking with Robert George of the Daily News, talking about issues of free speech and Donald Trump, the NFL, all that good stuff. Where can everybody find you?
Okay, well, as a number of people know, you can find me quite too often, in fact, on Twitter. I'm at Rob George, and I'll be in between throwing out insights and stuff, commenting on politics. There might be one or two very bad puns
They're very good puns, sir.
Some people won't be surprised, but some may be. Is that you're also a stand-up comedian? Is that correct?
I have dabbled in stand-up comedy and improv for a few years too. That is quite correct.
There you go. All right. Well, now before you go, okay, we do have one question that is what we refer to as our gotcha question. In fact, we're launching a new question. We're doing something that's going to kind of coincide. We're starting to ease into what people might think might be the holiday season. We're getting there. So we're actually going to start doing this a little bit sooner. And Neil, I'll let you explain what we're going to do here.
Sure thing. So
yeah, please, Neil, tell me what you were doing.
Yeah. Ha-ha! There it is.
Ah, the puns. There we go.
There it goes. So the
I'll let you guys go without having throwing one.
I deserve it. So the question, of course, is one on which Jay and I vehemently disagree. We only take questions to our guests that Jay and I cannot resolve between ourselves. And this one This one is it's a big one, and as Jay mentioned, it does have something to do with the holidays. So it is a matter of vital cultural importance. The way you answer it matters. It will make a difference to people. It may, in fact, spark.
Do you really want me to say that Megyn Kelly is right and Santa Claus is white? Is that what you're trying to get out of me now?
Nothing. It's far more controversial than that. Far more controversial than that. So, here's the question. Robert George of the New York Daily News. Is Love Actually a good movie, or is it crap?
I'm gonna really embarrass myself here and say I have never seen Love Actually.
Wow.
You are lucky, sir. You're lucky.
I've never seen Love Actually. However, I will put this out there and say that Die Hard is as much a Christmas movie as Home Alone is.
Wow. So I will reveal.
Is that a good response for me swinging and whiffing on Love Actually?
We can add your response to the Die Hard total, because we had that as a question last year.
We did.
so we can add that in the plus column for Die Hard. But I will say this: I myself am a fan of Love Actually. I am a married man, which explains why I get to watch it every single year. And Jay, you dislike Love Actually.
Yeah, it's
you're not a fan.
People sit there and rank it as one of their favorite Christmas movies, and I'm like, this is schmaltzy crap.
Every Christmas movie is schmaltzy crap. This one is heartwarming and British. And
yeah, that's another strike against it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm saying this now as a person who hasn't watched it. I will say that that it being British, I think elevates it in my view. Again, I seven of my first 8 years were in the UK. I was born in Trinidad. We moved to England, and then I came to the United States when I was about 8, going on 9. So UK sensibilities. I'm sitting here drinking my tea right now. So the Britishness is strong with me. So I would have to, in a sense, say that the fact that it's British alone probably puts it a few points above crap.
Ooh, I'm gonna count this as a win for me.
What?
This is a win for me because.
Okay. All right. Just so we know that, I mean, we'll count it as a win. But just so we know, we have Robert on record a few points above crap. Okay.
Now, hey. Is Colin Firth? Is that a Colin Firth movie? Or is that a Hugh?
They're all in it.
Yeah,
they're
like
all
every British person.
Colin Firth. All of them.
It's basically like the Justice League of America of British
awkward British actors.
Right, exactly. It's a superhero. it's a superhero. It's a team up, basically.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. Sheriff Rick from The Walking Dead is in it, and he's a complete pussy. But
Andrew Jackman.
Sheriff
okay.
Rick. Everybody knows him as that.
Well, I recommend you check it out this holiday season. Your life will never be the same.
I will. It's a promise. It's a promise.
All right. Well, Robert, thanks again for joining us. Really appreciate it. Great insight, and some people. I am interested in hearing what people are going to think of the James Brown comparison. So I am kind of looking forward to that. But overall, I appreciate what you had to say. Appreciate the perspective that you brought, and we want to have you back at some point. You'll want to come back, right?
Absolutely. It was a great conversation, and I will look forward to ricocheting back towards you guys at a future date.
Nice.
Nicely done. Another pun. All right. Robert George, okay, everyone, guys. From the Daily News. Sir. All right, Neil. Well, that's another episode in the can.
Yes, indeed, Jay, it is. And a very good episode it was, especially because I scored a point. plus column. We need to. I'm going to try to game this so that all of our guests are in the Love Actually column, and you just get absolutely destroyed on this.
Yeah, we'll see. You'll have to game it. That's probably going to be what you'll have to do in order to win. All right.
So my guests will have to be, let's see, my wife.
Yeah, you're going to no using the no. There will be no. Well, you're probably going to start polling people on Facebook.
I'm going to get a ringer.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So before we sign off, remember what we said before. Do us a favor. Go to podcastlistener.com/estate. It's a short survey. Kind of, you won't be sharing any information. Nobody's going to be calling you, anything like that. You're not going to get a call from any of our advertisers trying to get buy their products. That's our job. We have to sell that to you.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, just go ahead and do that. Podcastlistener.com/estate. We appreciate it. And that's going to do it for Neil Dewing. I'm Jay Caruso. We will see you next time here on The Fifth Estate.